people are dying because they're waiting on us. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? We are live today on May 16th. We haven't been live, I think, all last week. Right. There's been a lot of stuff happening, James. Yeah, busy weekend. Busy week.
It was. It has been a very busy weekend. Congratulations to the graduates of Clark Atlanta University. Go Panthers. My youngest daughter just graduated from there and walked the stage. Woohoo! Yeah, proud pop. But also congratulations to all graduates, middle school, high school, preschool, pre-K, kindergarten, universities and colleges alike, business schools. Congratulations to you all and to your family members who are receiving accolades for their education, because education is very key in what we do in life.
Yeah, and I think I read that Pinky Cole, the Slutty Vegan founder, was your daughter in on that group of yes. people she's gifted with LLC?
Gifted LLC. So we're trying to sit with her and figure out which direction, what she wants to do with it, that kind of thing. But yeah, she was gifted an LLC to become a business owner of her own.
Yeah, congrats. I know there was a lot of different graduations this weekend. We know Clark had theirs. I think Spelman had theirs and Morehouse had theirs. And because I remember Representative Nakima Williams was coming to church on Sunday, but she was running behind because of Spelman. I think she was speaking at Spelman. So, I mean, congratulations, as you stated, to all the graduates out there. So it was a great weekend from the aspect of people graduating from high school, from college, from elementary, middle school. But we also had a huge tragedy. I don't want to talk about because it's something that's very real, and it's a reality. So as you know, for those who don't know, I found out literally yesterday. I was not aware of it on Saturday because I cut my phones off. But on Sunday, when I got back to Atlanta to go to church, that's when I found out about the shooting that happened in Buffalo, where an 18-year-old young man, and it's believed to be racially motivated, had a manifesto where he was literally going to, he went out to say he was going to kill as many Black people as he possibly could. And I think that I don't want to shy away from this topic this morning because of the fact that it's very raw and it's very real. And if you're a Black man or you're a Black person in America, this has done something to us or reignited something within us on another level, on another scale, because we've seen this happen before. And this, you know, one of the things that I'm always so amazed by is how forgiving we have been as a society, as a community, how forgiving we have been in situations like this. I remember when Nathan Dillon went up and shot the people in South Carolina at the church in Charleston.
Yeah.
Literally, the people who were there in his hearing would say, "We forgive you because that's what our faith teaches us. And I was watching a lady yesterday who was talking about, you know, if she would have went into the store 3 minutes before, she would have been dead. But she was talking about, like, literally she forgives the young man because her faith teaches her that. And it's amazing how in the Black culture, our faith is so important. It's so important. But at the same time, with having that faith, I think that we can have that faith and still be tired. Still be tired of when we walk out the door, there's a bullseye on our back. But this just exposes something, I think, more in America that we haven't been really talking about. That racism is very real, and it's something that has been inflamed, and it's something that has been really on forefront in the last couple of years, and it's never gone away. I don't think we've had a podcast since last week, and you know, James, I had an opportunity to meet with Miss Clayton last week, Miss Anona Clayton last week, yes. And I asked her, I remember I shared this with you guys, I asked her the question, you know, how do you feel about the change from then and now? And she asked me the question, what's changed? That even though they may not be, and it's not for all white people, right? Let's clarify that. But there's a huge chunk of people, of white people, who are very much still racist and very much have not dealt with the issue of racism. I point out the fact that where we're at, there's a daycare And there's a lot of white kids go to the daycare. There's a lot of black kids go to the daycare. But you don't see them, like, you don't see the kids doing it. My godson, I was just talking to him recently. He just changed schools and went to a new city and changed schools, where he goes predominantly, like, very mid-school. And one of the white kids came up to him the other day and was like, you know, he's my best friend. This is my best friend. But then there was another one, like, a week later, who went up to him, and he's about 8, and said to him, black people are stupid, is what he said to him. And again, we see the difference in the two households. We see the difference in how the two are being raised. Two white kids come from two different households. Racism is not something that's bred within a person. People don't grow up. I mean, people are not naturally born to be racist.
That's right.
It's something that's ingrained within a person. And I think that we as Americans, we have to start really talking about the soul of our nation, because as great of as an empire or a nation as we think we have, a lot of empires have fallen because of pride, because of division, and America's on the brink.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you were telling the story about the two little kids and the various households that they grew up in, reminded me of a Disney movie, The Fox and the Hound, where as puppies, they played together. And then as adults, as they got older, they more or less grew apart. They were friends, but they came from basically two different sides of the fence. And, you know, the hound had to do his job, and the fox did what came natural to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so when you look at it, when you look at the two different the households, one is doing what is natural and the other one is doing what it's trained to do. Not yet. The child is doing what he's been trained to do, how the way his household has been brought up. And I think that makes a difference. When it comes to dealing with racism, it is a learned habit, a learned trait. It is not anything that is ingrained in our DNA by birth or anything of that nature. It is definitely something that you learn from your environment, family, friends, or whoever. And I think that makes a huge difference. Like you said, one that calls them a best friend, the other one calls them stupid for the most part. And, you know, and that kind of leads me into what I wanted to say about the temperature, if you will, in for white supremacists. They feel as if they are the minority, or it's starting to show that they feel like they're the minority. Because of the lack of birth rates and all that kind of stuff. So, but anyway, when you come down, when you break it down, yes, you have a large number of people of color, whether they be African-American, Mexican-American, Asian-American, Indian-American, just coming from from around the world, who have come into this country and have basically bested their way into position as doctors, attorneys, CEOs of businesses and whatnot. And the folks who have been running the business for so many years are being, well, more or less pushed aside. And so they feel, I believe that they feel like, I can understand where they're coming from when they feel like people of color are taking our jobs. Well, you got to remember now, for a number of years, it was a job that you didn't even want. You wanted to be the owner. And so you had people coming to do it. Now things have changed, and the ownership has changed as well. So for some folks, the landscape, because ownership has changed, because you have people who have, what's the word I'm looking for, who have educated themselves in that field, the color has changed there, and now they are the experts. People of color are now the experts in that field, where before it was a job that whites didn't even want. Now, so it stands to reason why I understand why you feel like people are coming and taking your jobs. Well, you didn't even want the job when you first started. Let's not forget that. You wanted to be the owner, but you didn't want to do the work or the education that was required to keep the job that you already had or the position that you had. And now that you've basically outsourced all the work and the workers into other countries where they have become the expert in the industry, whatever industry, they have become the expert in that field. And now you want to complain about how you are, not being where you're losing jobs to people of color. Well, just so many years ago, you didn't even want the job.
Yeah, but I don't know. I probably would say that for me, it's deeper than that, right? I forget about the aspect of money, because money has never, in all reality, right? If America wants to prosper, the best thing you could do is put money in the hands of African Americans, because we go out and we spend money, right? Let's be honest. I'm in a place right now where I'm probably one of the very few Black people here, but they don't mind me spending money, but they do mind serving me, right? So I think it speaks to the culture, right? I think it speaks to the culture in which we live in currently, the climate in which we live in currently, where either you're Democrat, Republican, and if you're Republican, you cannot listen to Democrats, and if you're Democrat, you cannot listen to Republican. That we have the right to tell a person what to do with their bodies. Like, no one can tell me to wear a mask. Don't do that. But you know what? You can tell me whether or not I need to have a child or not, even though it's still my body. Understand that me wearing a mask or me not wearing a mask can actually affect you. But if I have an abortion on my body, it only affects me and the person that's within me, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's funny how, as a country, we're so divided, but it's also, I think we're divided because mentally we're just divided, right? To be able to say that we're pro-life, right? And we want to protect every unborn child, but yet we don't want to protect the people who are yet still alive, people who are living, right? Who are here today. That speaks to the psychosis of a nation. I mention this all the time. I forgot, it's either North Carolina or South Carolina that has just legalized that a way of capital punishment, that they have a firing squad, right? And that's pro-life, that we can actually give officers guns and say, shoot the person because they committed a heinous crime. And that's what we consider to be pro-life. I mean, if we believe pro-life, the definition of pro-life, from what I understand, is that we believe that God is the only one that has the right to give or take life, period, right? So it shouldn't be something that's applied across the board. When people don't want to wear a mask, and we knew in the beginning of this pandemic that if we did not wear a mask, you were putting somebody else's life at risk. People argued for that and combated that, even to the fact that when they got the ruling from Florida that struck down us being able to wear or having to wear a mask on public transportation, people on planes pulled the mask off and began to clap, not knowing if they had COVID, not knowing if the person sitting next to them was a diabetic or had underlying conditions, putting somebody else's life at risk. How is that pro-life, right? And we look at a nation now where we're so divided on issues that we're really divided on the issues, right? Wow. I'm pro-life. Even though I don't support abortions and I want that to be banned, no one tells me to wear a mask and protect my family and protect other people around me. That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. And the thing that even makes less sense is the simple fact that you want to be pro-life, but you want to complain. How do you plan on taking care of these folks when, a girl has been raped and has to carry the child to full term, when, the kids, were 12 or 13 years old and, for the first time and got caught. I mean, as we would say, getting caught, messing around, experimenting or whatever the case may be. But who raises that child? That child is not prepared mentally or physically to be able to handle the stress that comes along with being a parent, because they're still a child to begin with. So it creates a quagmire of issues that come along with having childbirth, and to force someone to go to into, you know, to carry a child full term, really isn't, it may not be the best thing for the parent, the mother. It may cost the mother her life to carry full term. These are the kind of things that are, I don't think they're taking it into consideration long term. Yeah, it's great short term, you know, because you want to, you know, you want to say that we were right and you were wrong at the end of the day. But, at you know, when it comes down to it, even when you look at the, you know, it's still, there's still dollar signs that come along with this decision now.
Yeah, but even, and without, like, I remember, I mean, I didn't want to go too much into the Roe versus Wade ruling, but I'm talking about it from the perspective of how can we be so pro-life, but yet the same people who are pro-life are not on the streets of Buffalo right now, standing out there with the community in Buffalo, saying that these lives shouldn't have been taken. That's pro-life, right? If we're pro-life, we have to be able to protect all life. And that's what I'm coming from when it comes to that, because I know we're going to have a discussion later on this week with people who are going to, we're going to talk about Roe versus Wade this week with a few women, because, you know, two men just discussing a woman's body, that's what they're tired of. But I want, like, you know what I'm saying, pro-life, and the fact that we talk about Buffalo, the same people who are so pro-life should be on the streets of Buffalo right now, protesting and putting up flowers and saying that this is wrong. And I don't, like, as a Black man, I'm outraged. I'm upset. I'm offended. But you don't see everybody in the uproar. Like, everybody should be right now upset about what has happened in Buffalo and the reason for it. And I'm not saying upset from the perspective that we go out and we're burning stuff and we're knocking stuff down. Upset enough to get out there and galvanize people to go out and vote, right? Upset enough to get people out there to run for office who stand for what we stand for. Upset enough to get people out there to understand that, hey, if we don't come together as a community, as churches, as schools, as cities, as counties, as states, we're going down a slippery slope and it's not going to be pretty.
And see, and one of the things that's going to be brought up again that has already been mentioned from what I saw on the news, CNN this weekend, one of the things that came up was the young man, not only he didn't live, he actually lived in that town. Mm-hmm. He came from another town, and the gun, apparently, now what we're trying to find out, or what they were trying to find out at that time, was the purchase, where he purchased, where that weapon came from. And the point was brought up that although in New York you can't, but in Pittsburgh, in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, you can go to a gun show and purchase. But see, now one of the things that you have to add to the list of crimes is gun trafficking at that point, because you didn't buy it in your state. You bought it in another state and transported it across state lines. So that was one of the things that came across. So there's a number of issues that come into play when it comes to that. But, you know, we still fighting for our right to be able to bear arms and stuff, but how to use them. And I've made mention of it before, is that even when, you know, you can't, the gun sellers are doing what they do. They sell weapons. That's what they do. And, you know, they don't have the luxury of being able to run a background check right then, right there. It's all about the dollar and being able to sell the weapon that you want to purchase to you at that time. And so the things that we are advocating for when it comes to gun violence, mental health comes into play. And again, when you talk about the manifesto of this young man, and we've spoke about another situation where a young man had a manifesto that he had posted on public social media, as this young man did. They're showing it. The hand is right there on the table. It's open for all to see. And it kind of tells you the mental mindset of where someone is. Now, should that person be able to purchase? Thinking like that? No, I think at the end of the day, you have to make a decision one way or the other, and then you have to stick with it. But I believe the powers that be will once again make a rule, and then, of course, it'll be applied to liberally as they see fit.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about this morning when I thought about the situation in Buffalo, it made me think about the situation in Wisconsin with Cal Rittenhouse, how he killed two white Americans and he walked out of the city with his gun hanging it above his head, went to trial and ended up winning his trial. And I have to say, as a black man, we wouldn't have made it 2 feet out of the city. The country would have been in an uproar if that would have happened. And I'm not trying to make this a race-based situation, but let's look at facts, right? Factually. Black people are not out here killing white people just because of the color of their skin. Let's be clear. You rarely hear that, right? If a black person has killed a white person, it's just because they're in the midst of a robbery or whatever the case may be, trying to commit a crime, but it's not for the purpose of, because you're white, I'm taking you out, right? We have to deal with the fact that this is not the first person that has come out and said that, hey, because of the fact that they are black, because of the fact they look different, because of the fact that they're beneath us, that they're not worthy of what we're allowing them to do in our society, right? That we have to go back and we have to take America back, because America was not designed for them. It was designed for us. And they're taking too much of the prosperity of America. I think that's something that requires soul searching, right? That requires us to look at ourselves as a nation and look at the laws in which we place, where people can freely get away with these kind of things. That's an issue. The fact that, you know, even I think last week a report leaked that a book is getting ready to come out, and it talks about President Trump, and I think he was the defense secretary at the time, Mark Asper, I think his name is, or something like that. But he writes in the book about how President Trump had called them and asked them, hey, you know, with all these protesters, is there a way for us to just go out and shoot them? Let's just shoot the protesters, right? We know that these people were protesting because of George Floyd. These were mostly African-Americans, black people, but it was diverse. It was white people, black people. They were out there protesting for against police brutality. They were peaceful protesters. And yet it was okay for him to say, let's shoot them, right? Let's take them out. But yet people who rioted the Capitol, killed police officers, injured people, were looking to kill the Speaker of the House, was looking to kill the Vice President of the United States. Those same people who were hiding in bunkers are now going out here and painting the picture like these people are some righteous patriots who are being mistreated and being drugged through the system. There's something wrong with that. And I mean, I don't know, like, I'm angry because of the fact that we're allowing, as a black person, we're allowing this to happen way too much. And when I say we're allowing it to happen, I don't mean, again, I go back to, I'm not calling for violence, right? Let's make that clear. But I'm saying we have to get out and use the tools we have in this democracy in order to make our voices heard. And we have to continue to do it. We did it in 2020. We did it in 2021 when we reelected Warnock and Ossoff to the Senate in Georgia. And as of right now, it seems like we're doing it again, because early polling shows that people are voting in large numbers right now. We have to continue to use the tools we have. We have to continue to vote. We have to continue to come together. We have to continue to galvanize around each other. We have to continue to strategize. We have to continue to show love in the midst of hate, right? I started off by talking about how even in South Carolina, those people stood up in his trial and said, we forgive you because our faith teaches us to forgive you, right? We have to continue to love the other side, even if they don't love us the way we want them to love us. We have to, because at the end of the day, I think that this speaks more to the soul of our nation than anything. And I am offended. I'm offended by the fact that my money's good enough for certain parts of America, but my skin color isn't. I'm offended by the fact that, you know, I'm okay with America as long as I keep my mouth shut when America mistreats me. But the moment I open my mouth about America mistreating me, then now I'm some kind of a terrorist. I'm some kind of a threat to American democracy. But yet the other side can open their mouth all the time. The other side can kill people. The other side can riot the Capitol. And it's okay. And they're called patriots. Absolutely. But we can't peacefully protest without being considered a terrorist or a threat. The reality is that the biggest threat to America today is not Russia. It's not Iran. It's not North Korea. It's not nobody else but America. Right extremism is the biggest threat to America today, but we don't want to address that. We haven't called, Congress hasn't come together to pass laws against it. We haven't done anything,
John. That's because you look at, you're telling people to look in a mirror. You're telling the country to look in the mirror and correct the flaws. And these are deeply rooted flaws that have been ingrained in our country since the country has been founded, you know, when it came to, you know, bringing people in on the ships to do the work. So it goes back a long, long way. And, you know, so this, the mindset has and thought process and the teachings of folks who think like this, feel that it's perfectly okay as long as it doesn't hurt them. And the minute it starts to affect them, then you have, you know, now you have a backlash, and because it's affecting us. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, at this point, I agree. We, you know, we still have to, you know, fight with love, and, you know, as believers in Christ and the Bible, we still have to show and live our life in that way in the teachings of what we believe. But at the same time, I think at some point, you're going to start seeing, because this is a neighborhood grocery store that took place. And you're going to start finding people, and you know, that people have had enough. Now they can, in certain states, you can open carry, and you will probably start seeing more people. And this may be by design. Well, if we get one or two random shootings that take place in their neighborhoods, so on and so forth, maybe we can get people excited enough to start carrying and brandishing their weapons in public. And if the police don't get involved, then maybe, you know, we ourselves can go ahead and start the race war. I think there's, you know, at the end of the day, this is all leading up to something, you know what I'm saying? And or potentially can lead up to something. And you're going to start, I honestly believe you're going to start seeing folks, people of color, you know, because they have legally purchased firearms and have legally purchased and registered their firearms, that you're start, you may actually start seeing more people carrying. Now, is that the solution? Probably not. But it's hard to take advantage of somebody who's willing to fight back.
Yeah, and I would just, you know, again, I don't want to make it seem like we're, like, neither one of us, I think we speak, I speak for both of us, are promoting any kind of violence. But, like, the thing I would want to point out is that you can only push a person in the corner for so long.
That's right.
Before they have to figure out a way to get out of the corner. And and I want us to use the tools we have. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying we need to, like, I remember when George Floyd happened, there was a huge spike in gun sales amongst African Americans. I remember when you went to purchase, like, I remember the lines that was out there. And they were mostly African American people in places like Douglasville. It was just interesting. But we have to use the other tools we have. We have to use the right to vote, make sure that everybody in that household is registered to vote, make sure everybody in the household goes out and vote, and not be afraid to do it. We have to reform our justice system to where people are treated fairly. To where we're not locking up people, and people who are minorities are getting sentences that are 3 to 4 times higher or harder than any other race. If we look at, I was looking, talked to another nonprofit last week, and they on their website, they show stats. Georgia, for example, Georgia has the highest parole and probation rate than any other state in the country, meaning that we put more people on probation and parole than any other state in the country. Why is that so important? It's because Georgia has a law that says, hey, you can have your right to vote back if you commit a crime, but only when you are done paying your fines and fees, and only when you are off probation or parole, in or parole, right? So it means that as long as I keep you on probation or parole, I keep you silent because you no longer have a voice, right? We have to do things to escalate our way of thinking. We have to do things to teach our Black people that instead of us being locked up and doing things to break the law, that we can get out here and we can create these new businesses. We can invest within ourselves. We can keep our money within our own community. Because of the fact of the matter is that you take the Black dollar out of America and America is going to be bankrupt before we know it. And we need to start galvanizing around that. We have to be more strategic and not emotional about this. Even though I'm upset, let's get in the room. Let's talk. Right. For our brothers and sisters on the other side who want to stand with us in this fight to say that right is right and wrong is wrong, we will stand with you as well. When we talk about women's rights, when we talk about the rights of gays to marry or the LGBTIQ community plus community to marry, I mean, it's not something that we have not stood up with, but we need people to stand up with us at the same time. We need to be more, and we need to be those sheriffs. We need to be the police officers. We need to be the mayors of counties and cities. We need to get out and run for office. We need to not only think that success is being the next big pop artist or next movie star, but success is being the next mayor, the next governor, the next senator of our city, our state. That's how we give ourselves. That's how we're going to make this country more fair and more diverse, is that we have to have representation in these places.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off, but one of the things that I remember reading about Malcolm X, one of the things that he said was, by the bullet or by the ballot. And I'm all for by the ballot, but there's, and I understood what he was saying when he said it, because, you know, we have to be able to make the votes. We have to know who we're voting for. We have to be able to put people, like-minded people like ourselves, into office where we can start making a change and a difference in our city, our state, our county, and in our country by using the ballot. But I don't. I also believe that he was not opposed to the bullet as well, to in protecting said rights that the United States affords us, and protecting his your household and your person when you are out in public. You should be able to walk down the street, and those people who were killed should have been able to go inside that grocery store and shop without having to fear or even carry a weapon to go grocery shopping. That makes absolutely no sense. Or to go inside the church and be able to worship or Bible study and not have to carry a weapon. No one should have to live in that kind of fear. But if they feel like they need to protect themselves, you're going to start seeing people do that. But first and foremost, like you said, Sean, we still also have to fight with the ballot as well. First and foremost, because those are the things that are going to be law at the end of the day.
And I mean, all I can say is that we just have to, it's time for us to really search ourselves. But I know, I mean, I know we have a lot of sticky topics for the rest of the week. I know we'll be talking about Roe versus Wade later on this week and what it means for the Supreme Court and talking to people who have differences of opinions. But we also have a busy week. We will be in Augusta this weekend, or Stapleton, Augusta area this weekend, for our fourth One Accord conference, where we'll have people like Pastor Luke and Pastor Goodman and Reverend Biddy and so many different other elected officials who will be speaking this week. So I'm super excited about that. That will be on this, the 21st of May, will be hosted at, give me the name of...
Stonewall Springfield.
Thank you.
Church in Stapleton, Georgia.
Yes, thank you, Stone Springfield.
5:30 to 7:30. Please come out and join us.
Please come out and join us. And if you haven't, I mean, there'll be more information going out about it today and tomorrow. But here's a quick video for our promo. But we'll see you guys tomorrow back here at 1 o'clock.
To have to speak truth to power.
We just have an obligation to do one thing and one thing only, and that's tell the truth.
Because if we live by what his word says, we're not going to go wrong.
Every human being deserves equal treatment.
If you don't know Vincent's name in your own community, don't call George's name.
Where is the church today?
One is a church, one is a package store. Which one is the greater influence?
We must educate our people like never before.
Even in our community, we too will be able to push back the soot.
We've got to put our foot down and say, as for me and my house, not only will we serve the Lord, but we'll look like him.
One Accord is what we need.
Stand up for all of God's children, and let's be on